Hello and welcome into another edition of SaaS Whispers. My name is Jay McFarland, and today I'm so excited to introduce you to Scott Kahn. He is the CIO for the city of Modesto, and he has some really unique experience because he spent the majority of his career in the private sector, and now he's moved to the public sector. And you'll hear his stories and his experience with bringing SaaS into the public sector, how he deals with security and certifications, and also his love for SaaS applications. All right, Scott, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show today. I always like to find out kind of what your journey has been, especially if what you're doing now is what you wanted to be when you grew up.
Always a tricky question. Really, it is. I have always enjoyed the world of technology. Started out in the private sector, actually as a Radio Shack salesperson, if you could believe that. My first computer was a TRS-80, where I learned to program in BASIC. But from there, went to AT&T. From there, went to the world of company turnarounds. Merged six companies, took them public, and said goodbye. And you can only golf so much and fish so much and play so much. So after 6 months, I started a consulting firm in technology. We like to joke that we were the overpriced executive consultants. And everybody got a quick laugh out of that until we presented our bill, of course. And did that for 20 years. And once my kids had grown up and gone through college and had left the house, my wife and I looked at each other and said, what do we want to do now? And so we moved to the Bay Area in California. And I wound up getting a job at the city of Concord. It was my first public sector job. And enjoyed that so much that when an opening occurred at the city of Modesto 6 years later, I put my resume in. And they were kind enough to review it and actually brought me on board as their CIO. So I've been in this position for 4 months now.
Oh, for 4 months. So you're really fresh there with the city, but not fresh with what you're doing every day, I'm assuming.
Oh, no. I mean, they wouldn't have brought me in otherwise. They weren't looking for a newbie here. They were looking for the gray hair. So I have enough supply of that to keep them happy.
Well, I'm curious with that expanse of a career and all of your experience, is there any part of that that stands out for you as your favorite part, or is it just kind of always what you're working on next?
It's always what you're working on next. I've had many favorite parts. I mean, tremendous experiences along the way, great memories and wonderful friendships. But I'm in the process of going on a new adventure here in Modesto. And I have to tell you, I'm absolutely loving it. I have lucked into a spectacular IT team here. There are 36 of us that handle 1,350 employees in the city. And I can't believe how lucky I was to have the team I do. And we're already making great improvements, moving the ball forward, to the point where our customers, you know, both the residents of Modesto and our internal city departments are all complimenting us right and left. And if you'll allow me just to toot the horn one little bit here, Jay, I just got back from the Municipal Information Systems Association of California conference, MISAC. It's all the IT departments that represents local government agencies. And my team walked away with the Excellence Award for Technology Practices, one of only 12 cities to get that award. So I've got a great team here, and I'm just loving life right now.
Well, I love it when you toot your horn. You know, we talk to a lot of people, and most of them are in the private sector. So you really have a unique perspective. You've been in both. What would you say is the primary difference of going from the private to the public?
I would tell you in the beginning, a lot of frustration. There is an awful lot of process required by law when you're in the public sector, and it's all aimed at ensuring that people aren't doing bad things and that everything you're up to is highly transparent. That's not necessarily the case always in the private sector. But what it allows me to do is grab the private sector spirit of entrepreneurship and bring that to the public sector. And so long as you're willing to work within the confines of the law, obviously, which we are, you can bring that little spark to get things done at a different pace. And I have been told around the water cooler, that's probably the one comment people have made about me in the last 4 months. Scott works at a different pace than our prior CIOs. So I'm hoping that's a good thing, and that everybody can keep going forward, because they're certainly keeping up with me if that's the case.
Well, that's awesome. I'm curious, you talk about pace. I know in some organizations it can take forever to go through the process of choosing software, getting it installed, getting it to the front end user. Do you find that you're able to do that more effectively in the public sector, or does it take a lot more paperwork and process?
Well, it does take paperwork and process. And as to more effectively, I think the answer would be more thoroughly. Okay, because we need to adhere to certain things. I mean, I'll give you a for instance. If we're going to go out and buy a software package that costs over $10,000, I need to go and research three different people that sell that particular package and make sure I'm getting the best deal on behalf of the residents and on behalf of the city. If we're going over $50,000, we need to go get approval from our city council and explain to them how this will benefit the city and its residents going forward. So there's a lot more checks and balances on the public side than there is on the private sector side, which forces more thoroughness in your research. I mean, you need to know what you're talking about when you stand up before the mayor and the city council members to properly explain why this is what it is and why we need it.
Yeah, I'm also curious. I know in the, private sector, what a lot of companies are going through is with SaaS applications, it's so easy to sign up, and they end up with employees who have company credit cards, and they're subscribing to SaaS applications, and company information and client information ends up everywhere, and they're actually calling this SaaS chaos. I'm guessing that in the public sector, you don't have as much of that.
We have our pockets of that, actually. You know, SaaS chaos is a real thing. I mean, we're talking with Zoom about doing some special collaboration meetings, hybrid meeting things. And out of curiosity, we asked them, you know, how many Zoom accounts does the city of Modesto have? Well, it turns out we have over 100. Most of them are the freebie online ones that people signed up for using their Modesto email addresses, and they use them on behalf of the city. But, you know, we had no idea we had that many folks out there. So we're trying to create more of an enterprise license environment and get our hands around this, make sure we're tracking these things. But there is chaos. And I would tell you that, we love the SaaS model. Absolutely love the SaaS model. Getting things off-prem is our preference. And we're looking at all of our existing on-prem systems with an eye in the future toward moving them into the cloud and getting them out of here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, that was my next question, which would you prefer? Because with your years in the industry, you've gone from completely on-prem to now SaaS. What is it that you love so much about SaaS versus on-prem?
Well, given the security environment of today's world and all the cybersecurity attacks going on everywhere in every industry, every sector, having your on-prem systems means you also have to maintain them, keep them patched, keep them up to date, and that takes resources, people, time, extra licenses for software and patches. And the SaaS model allows somebody else to have that headache and they're required to keep things up to snuff and patched and secure and such. And it changes what we watch. We don't watch whether the server is patched anymore. We watch, is this vendor in the cloud adhering to our agreement for security levels, security principles, things that they are required to have in place. Otherwise, we're not going to do business with them. So it shifts the responsibility from an on-site, I need physical bodies to go do these things, to lesser individuals monitoring and watching our SaaS vendors for compliance.
Yeah, and I think that monitoring is so important, because if there is ever a security issue, you can't sit there and say, well, it was our vendor. You know, your citizens are going to say it was the city, not the vendor. So you have to be very careful. And I know there are legal and financial consequences when there are data breaches.
Oh, there's no doubt. The finger pointing is extraordinary and somewhat natural. I keep telling my IT management team here, we better be secure or you know who won't be here the next day, you know? And while we chuckle about that, we are very dedicated to making sure that we are here the next day and are secure. And again, that MESAC award I mentioned earlier takes into account 20 questions on security. How secure a shop are you? And I'd like to say we're looking pretty good.
Well, it definitely sounds like it if you're getting awards for it. So we talked about the positives. What do you think needs to be worked on? What are some of the negatives that may still exist for SaaS within your organization or just as you see SaaS rolling out across the globe?
Negatives for SaaS? I'm not seeing many negatives for SaaS unless the vendors get so much business that they start neglecting their own systems, which is what we're paying them to do, is maintain their systems and keep them patched, keep them secure. I have seen circumstances where people became an application in the cloud, a SaaS vendor, and they didn't have their own resources in line to keep up with the demand. They grew so quickly. So we always keep an eye out for that. That might be one of the downsides of being able to do the SaaS model. But getting things off-prem here and into the cloud is without a doubt smartest thing we've done from a cost perspective, from a management perspective. Also, just imagine large data centers full of servers and storage, and we're paring all that down. We're combining data centers. We're going into a smaller footprint, and that saves money too. So I don't see a downside to the SaaS model, provided the security is in place and we're allowed to audit and check it from time to time.
Yeah, you talk about capacity and potentially being overwhelmed. I thought for sure during the pandemic, we were going to see SaaS applications like Zoom and other things. It just blows my mind that, you know, first of all, we would have never survived the pandemic without SaaS. But how did all of these organizations stay up? It was an amazing global effort to watch SaaS play out during the pandemic.
No, it definitely was. I would tell you, in California, it was primarily Microsoft Teams that was kind of the go-to for the vast majority of agencies in the public sector. And most people had only begun to play with this or test it. None of them had really implemented this yet. And when the pandemic hit and people were being sent home, the question to IT was, how do I keep people productive? How do we keep delivering services to the city, yet keep them safe, you know, for health-wise and isolated? And Teams just kind of lent itself to that model right away. And because it was more cloud-based and not on-prem based, it was very easy to implement for us. And while we did it cautiously and carefully, all of a sudden, everybody said, this is great. This works, you know, we're having meetings. I don't have to drive 2 hours to this facility anymore. I don't have to commute. So it was good in that sense. You know, Jay, I'll also say there's an old expression called, you know, once you let the horse out of the barn, it's tough to get him back inside. Okay. Well, so now that we're coming out, we hope, of the pandemic, and people are being asked, hey, we need you to come back into the workplace. I will tell you, the more progressive agencies are embracing the hybrid model. You know, why don't you come back for a day or two and you can do the rest remotely? Or perhaps your job doesn't require you to be in the office. Why don't you just be remote full time? And so progressive cities, and I'll say City of Modesto is one of those, is looking at leveraging what we learned by being remote and using things in the cloud, like Teams or Zoom, and recruiting high quality candidates that we're not saying you have to be in the chair because I want to make sure you're working your 8 hours. No, what we want is, can you deliver the goods? Are you a quality employee? And what's going to make you happy and make you stay on our great team here? And we're having tremendous success with that right now, when a lot of other places are forcing you to go back into the office.
Yeah, and a lot of those employees are doing so, you know, they're a little bit disgruntled about it. I remember discussions pre-pandemic, because we were starting to get to the point where people could work at home and, you know, starting to see SaaS. And there was a lot of questions about whether or not that model could work. The pandemic forced us to use that model, and we learned that, yes, it can work. And you talk about quality of life. You know, that can be game changing, especially in a place like California with traffic and commutes. I mean, how much more time you get to spend with your family. It's just absolutely remarkable.
All true. And, you know, actually, on that note, a lot of folks who live in Modesto and the surrounding area here travel over what we call the Altamont Pass to get into the Bay Area to do work. So we're one of those silly people that put up bulletin board signs that say, if you lived here and worked here, you know, you'd be home now, you know? So we're leveraging the remote work aspect of things and the ability to perform a good job and provide good deliverables to every extent possible. And even looking to expand that use to other departments and other job functions here at the city.
Yeah, I heard somebody use a phrase the other day I hadn't heard before, and it kind of blew my mind that this is happening, but zero contact hiring. And, you know, this is something that we're starting to see, and I never would have imagined seeing this. Is that happening within your organization?
I would say it was during the pandemic. The pendulum is kind of coming back the other direction now, more toward a personal interaction. So I can tell you, in the interview process that I was part of, everything was done virtually until the very last meeting, where I was down to the final two candidates. So at one point I had 12 directors on a Zoom call and me, you know, and answering questions for the 12 of them. In rapid fire. I kind of likened it to speed dating, right? You know, it was an interesting experience, but eventually the city manager finally had me come in, and he and I met face-to-face for the final interview. And that as they say, is that.
That's awesome. I do want to circle back a little bit. You talked about looking at SaaS and security and their certifications. Can you tell us a little bit more about what types of certifications you're looking for when you consider a SaaS provider?
Most of it is security mechanisms. You know, what kind of dual factor or multi-factor authentication are they using? What company are they using for that? What company would we be forced to use in order to get to their systems? Where are their cloud data centers located? How did you build in redundancy? Is there physical security at your center? So it's very much as if you had owned the center yourself and you're doing a walk around, deciding whether or not the center is served with power coming from two different sides of the building, two different locations, two different grids. Who are the vendors that provide the broadband circuits going in there? Is it all AT&T and Verizon, or do you have three vendors? Do they all come in through the same INPO? We do a full-on evaluation of those places. When you replicate data between your cloud structures, Is there one in Seattle and is there one in Phoenix? You know, how do you separate them? And are we getting replicated? So if one of your centers goes down, we'll never know it because we're auto switched to the other center. So it's very much like building your own data redundancy, but using the vendor in the cloud to actually do all the dirty work for you.
Yeah, I'm curious, you've been there for 4 months. Are there providers that once you got there didn't meet the criteria and so you moved on from them or asked them to change?
That's a really loaded question there, Jay.
You don't have to give us names or anything like that.
The answer is we're in the process of reviewing all of our vendors, and they're aware that we are doing just that. And there are potentially a couple changes coming here in the next quarter or two for reasons where we are concerned about what they're delivering and how they're delivering it.
Yeah, but no names or anything like that. We're not ready for that.
No names.
All right, very good. Well, I love your feedback on SaaS. I love how it is changing the world and our environment. Is there anything else that you'd like to say about SaaS or that you look at as you bring this into the city of Modesto?
Not that I haven't really mentioned. I would say we've been dealing with small to medium-sized SaaS migrations or projects. We have one in the wings, which would be our ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning System, that handles finance, HR, a lot of different systems, our payroll. And we're looking at moving that to the cloud. And that is one where we're evaluating vendors. You know, is this the system we're going to stay with, or are we going to get somebody else and go to the cloud? But the one true direction is we're going to the cloud, and that'll probably be the largest migration that we have on the boards to try and accomplish. So I'd be lying if I said we weren't a little bit scared of that one, and we'll probably get some outside expertise and gray hair to assist us with that one because it's so important to the organization. But that's probably next up for us coming here after the first of the year.
Well, it sounds like with your background and experience, you're gonna take it on and rise to the challenge as you have in the past. I do have a couple of questions that I like to ask. These are not necessarily tech related, but with your experience and your background, I'd love to know. You talked about going through the hiring process. What are qualities that you look for when you go through that process?
Well, the fun part about going through the interview process is that the people who are doing the interviewing oftentimes forget that the applicant is actually interviewing them also. I mean, there have been companies where I'm sure everybody that listens to the podcast would say, I was sitting there uncomfortable and I didn't like what they were asking me and I didn't like the interviewer. You know, I mean, that should be your first indicator that maybe that's not a good fit for you. But making sure that you're interviewing them as much as they are interviewing you would be one aspect. And just really the realization of that. Okay. The second one would be, yes, you do have to be qualified. So there should be some very specific questions in the interview process that the applicant should be able to answer if they're applying for a specific job that requires those skills. It can't be a, you know, generic answer. You know, if you ask somebody, you know, do you like NAS storage versus this other type of storage? You know, they need to be able to describe the difference and tell you which one they like. And the final one, and this is my favorite, it's one that I use anytime I'm hiring IT personnel. I learned this, credit be due, from Disney World, who was a consulting client of mine. They always put people through what they called the smile test. So they, at three different points in the interview, would have a question that meant absolutely nothing to the interview process. They would just throw the question out and then the interviewer would smile. And they would wait to see if the applicant would smile back in response. So, you know, it could be, gee, you know, sometimes you have to work in the hot sun. Is that going to be an issue for you? And they'd wait to see the response. And anybody who got all three smile checks passed, they made it into the final pool.
Well, I've never heard about the smile test, but it does make a lot of sense. I think it speaks to personality. I think it speaks to people's ability to work with other people, to face challenges. What will their attitude be facing those? So it makes a lot of good sense.
And I'll tell you, I did put it to the test when I heard that that's what they do. I mean, I literally walked around Disney World trying to find a Disney employee that was not happy or smiling. And this is a true story. I'll be doggone. I spent an entire afternoon looking, and every single one of them smiling, doing their thing, from the person sweeping up after the tourists to the person operating the ride. Truly impressive. And so I've always used that everywhere I've gone since then.
So I'm guessing there's a lot of smiles at the city of Modesto.
There certainly are in the IT department.
I love that. Okay. Do you have any favorite books or podcasts or things that you're reading right now you'd like to share?
Favorite books. Well, podcasts, I would tell you Dr. Alan Shark at CompTIA does something called Shark Bites. And it's a different technical topic every month that he does. Superb job. Really enjoy those. And was honored to be on a podcast myself in the past with him. From books, I tend to be very eclectic. I would tell you that I love things like Harry Potter, and I love Clive Cussler books for adventure. And from a business perspective, one of my all-time favorite books is The 1 Minute Manager Meets the Monkey, where it takes the 1 Minute Manager concept and basically says, is there a monkey on your back? And how did it get there? Well, it got there because you walked into some situation as the manager and you started feeding somebody else's monkey. They said, gee, I don't have enough time to do this. Oh, well, let me help you. Let me do part of that for you. That monkey just jumped on your back and now you're feeding it. You own it. You know, so when I see people staying here beyond the allotted time and struggling to make their deliverables, I know they're taking on too much. So I go and look at, you know, how can I help you get that monkey off your back? Okay. Let's figure out if that really belongs to somebody else or if it's yours or not. And that tends to breed happiness among the employees when they can go home at regular hours and know that they still did a spectacular job, which thankfully my team's already in that mode. So like I said, I was lucky.
Well, I don't know how much of it is luck. I can tell by your attitude and your passion and your love for your work that it's contagious. And I think so much of that comes from the top. And I can just sense that in just about everything you've shared with us today.
Appreciate that. You're making me blush now.
So one last question before I let you go. I like to ask people, what is their favorite quote or words that they live by?
And I've got two that are my current favorite quotes that, you know, they tend to change over time. the first one is, when two people in the same room always agree, one of them is unnecessary. So I tend to surround myself with people who have perhaps a different opinion than what I do. When we're talking about strategies or how to get from point A to point B, I value those that come in and say, no, that's wrong. Here's the way we should do it. And somewhere between that individual and myself, we wind up finding a path that makes sense and is safe and less risky, right? So when two people in the same room always agree, one of them is unnecessary. My second favorite is some people wait for the storm to pass. I prefer to dance in the rain. Mm. So I'm not going to sit on the sidelines and wait for the perfect time to do something. If something needs to be done, the team here in Modesto and all my prior teams in my careers have always just jumped out there in the rain, started dancing and make stuff happen.
Well, I love both of those. I love both of those. And the spirit of and that visual of dancing in the rain. And well, listen, it's been such a pleasure getting to know you and especially to hear the difference between the public and private sector. Do you ever see yourself going back to the private sector?
No, I really don't. I'm going to see this through. I promised City of Modesto at least 5 years. And at the end of that, we'll reassess where things are and what the needs might be. But I could see myself fading away into the background after that time period and going out and starting another consulting firm. So we'll just see what life brings. I still got 4.5 years to go until that decision point.
Yeah, you're just getting started there. Well, listen, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time today.
Really appreciate it. A lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Once again, I want to thank Scott Kahn for joining us. It's just such a pleasure to talk to him and really get a sense of his love for SaaS applications and just his attitude that he brings to work every day. Didn't you kind of think to yourself, I would love to work for this guy? I know I was thinking that. We want to thank him once again for joining us. Again, my name is Jay McFarland, and this has been another edition of SaaS Whispers.